I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Dave.
Thank you. My name's Dave. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Dave.
And I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope because John made me come up here. I'm an old man. I don't like to drive, but we did it. Thanks to Steve's support. So my experience is I was born May the 22nd, 1944. The name on my birth certificate was Robert Lee Henderson. My name is David Edwin Burge because my father was a chief in the Navy, and in World War II, the guys had a girl in every port. That was my mother. So I was the second child born to this woman. I can't remember her name. It's a Portuguese woman, and so the first child, my mother told me this when she went to adopt me out of the orphanage, and she said that the lady had one child out of wedlock and two was unacceptable. She kept the first one and gave me to the orphanage, you know. So I was cross-eyed when my mother adopted me, and so they had to take me to Dr. Bond down in the Bank of America building and had an operation on my eyes. They had to fix my eyes. So, I remember when I came in the program at 32 years old, I slept with the lights on, and I never knew why. And a guy shared at a meeting that he slept with the lights on, and he'd done an inventory on it, just because he was scared of the dark, and it had to do with his abandonment issues, which opened up a whole new understanding about why I had to, you know, when I was adopted, I had to sleep with the lights on. I went back and visited 804 Raven Street in San Diego, where I grew up, and my mother would accidentally close the door, and I remember just going nuts, just stark terror is what I wrote. It scared the hell out of me. And I didn't know that I had abandonment issues until somebody started talking about it in 1985 or whenever they started. Janet Woad had started writing those books, you know, about all that stuff. And so that just opened all kinds of doors for me. But so my mother, I was afraid of so many things that my mother was wonderful. And she would... do the only thing she knew to calm me down, and that was to give me something to eat, you know. And it was these things in a box that were crunchy, and so she would set me down with that box and a glass of milk, and I would eat half the box, and then she would say, well, you know, that's gluttony to eat that much. Well, she was right, you know. But so I learned at a very young age how to comfort myself from all the things I was afraid of, and that carried on until I was 32 years old and came to Overeaters Anonymous reluctantly after going to when I was 20 years old. I weighed 241 pounds. I remember that because I went to Dr. Stanley Z. Gilbert, my first diet doctor, in Azusa, California. And I got in line with all the ladies. He'd rented a house there in Azusa. I worked for a guy who was in automobile racing. A guy hired me to build engines for his racing car, and he said, you know, you've got to do something about your weight, you know. And he said, I go to this diet doctor, and he took me there, and you paid the guy $3, and he gave you this little packet of these little pills, you know, which were amphetamines. I didn't know anything about that stuff. All I knew was when I took one of them before each meal, I wasn't hungry. So, and I started to lose weight, and I was really excited. I came down to visit my mother, and she said, well, what's happened to you, sonny? How'd you lose all that weight? So I go to this doctor, and he gives me these little pills, and my mother, she said, well, those aren't good for you. I was really pissed at her, I remember, because, you know, can't you be a little more supportive, you know? And I'd go back to him, and I'd say, well, you know, I'm starting to get hungry, so I'll take two at each meal. And I think I was up to about five pills at each meal, and there was a fellow that I knew from the races, Charlie Potter, who OD'd on heroin, and he used to take me to the, like to take me to the diet doctor, because I can understand. I said, well, you don't need to lose any weight. Why do you want some of these pills? He says, I just like to have a bag of them, you know. So I asked for an extra bag of things, and Charlie would take them, you know. For you know, it's a good trade-off. He'd drive me all the way to Azusa to get the pills, and I moved to San Diego, and had to move back to San Diego because I didn't get along with my boss, and he let me go, and I was sleeping in my station wagon, and I said, well, I better go back home to Mom, you know. Because I'm also a weak male. I come from being a weak male. I didn't know that, you know. And so I always want to go back to mother, you know, or a woman to take care of me. And that's where I was in those days. And my father and I, my father was a rugged individual kind of guy. And he liked to get in fisticuffs. I've never been into that stuff. So I used to watch my father stop the truck and get out and beat the crap out of somebody. And he was a little guy, and he was a tough guy. You know, he used to scare me. His anger scared me to death. You know, and we never prayed at dinner. We never talked about feelings. But I remember my mother and father fought all the time over money and all this stuff. So that's how I grew up, with these two people fighting, until my mother went to they didn't have treatment centers, they called them insane asylums. And she said that my father caused her to have a nervous breakdown, and so she would go in these places, and the doctors, they would treat her, and my father would get into a lot of self-pity and everything, and beg her to come back, and then he'd come back, and then within a week they'd start fighting again. And it scared the crap out of me, being a little adopted kid. And I wondered how I got screwed up, you know. And as I ended up, you know, taking these diet pills and everything, I moved back to San Diego. I worked for this guy at a speed shop down there, and I'd say, you know, he said, well, we'd like to hire you. You know, you got a lot of skills and everything. I said, yeah, but every Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the month, I have to go to my doctor in Azusa, you know. And so I had to pick some things up up at Long Beach at Mickey Thompson. So I'd drive up there, and then I'd go over to Azusa and come back down. He said, as long as you're going up there, you can use the truck and go to pick all the stuff I need up from the vendors in Los Angeles. So it was a really nice trade-off. And one day he said, by the way, Dave, he said, why do you go to the doctor? And what do you got? Well, I'm on a diet. That's why. And I get these pills. And his wife was standing there. She says, hell, you can get those anywhere. And you know, it's like I've always put people on a pedestal. And Dr. Stanley Z. Gilbert was God to me because he had these magic pills. You don't understand, you know. I mean, and then to break that whole innocent thought of mine that you could get them anywhere, which just blew me away. You know, so I thought I can't have you doing that, you know, for something silly like that. So I couldn't go to L.A. anymore, you know. I went out on my own, and of course I went to work, and I being a compulsive overeater, I started to, you know, to eat and gain my weight back, you know. Because I was thin, women, you know, started to get attracted to me. So and I didn't know what to do about women, because I was the normal big fat guy. That's why I got involved in automobiles and things like that, because I didn't know what to do with women. And my parents fought all the time, and that was a real uncomfortable. I liked women, and I thought they were real pretty. But when I lost all my weight and came back to the bowling alley where I used to hang out, I used to dream about this, having a relationship with this woman, Judy Rudensky. I thought she was gorgeous, you know. And I lost all my weight. I weighed 190 pounds. I came back to the bowling alley, and she did what I always dreamed of. She ran up and threw her arms around me and says, Dave Burge, you are gorgeous. And I didn't know what to say to her. So I did the only thing I could do. I went down to 7-Eleven and bought a bunch of goodies. I didn't know I did that until I started writing. I mean, I didn't know what, I just didn't have the courage to say anything to her, you know. So I started eating again, you know, and just really... when I got in the program, I found out that I was angry at myself. I didn't know that at the time. I just, you know. And somebody said, you know, I heard a guy that was an alcoholic. He said, thank God I had alcohol or I would have committed suicide. You know, well, thank God I had the food to go back to. I would have killed myself, you know, because I take my drug away from me, I got to have something to replace it. So without telling you about all the doctors I went to, I went to the last doctor I went to about my weight was Dr. Marijanian, and she was a doctor of internal medicine at Kaiser Permanente, and she said, "Well, Dave, she had this diet, and she says, go on this diet and follow the diet, and you'll be fine, and come back and see me in a month." You know, so I'd go on the diet, I'd lose weight. I said, "Man, wait till a doctor sees me and weighs me. I lost all this weight, you know." And I go back there, and she says, "That's very good, you know, and you're doing fine." She had this, I call it a clinical smile. It's wonderful, you know. It's like it's painful for her to smile, you know. And so I lost all this weight and everything, and the guys at work at the Christmas party said, "Look, Dave, you lost all this weight. Come on, have something food to eat, you know." And of course, I still had the compulsion. I wasn't in the program, so. Yeah, you know, my mind, I've lost all this weight. I'm doing great. I could just probably have Christmas dinner with the guys, have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this. You know. And, of course, once I started, that craving started, you know, like it says in the big book. And so I keep thinking about this food I had. And so pretty soon I'm eating it, you know. And the obsession takes over, and I'm gone, you know. So there my weight comes back on. And then they had this wonderful thing. I read about it somewhere. Somebody told me about it. The stomach bypass surgery. This was back in 1970s, you know. And so I went back to Dr. Mary Jane and I said, "Look, I'm nuts. I know that. I found this thing. Anybody that eats like I am," I told her, "is crazy. You know, I got a psychological problem or something, you know. I want the bypass surgery," and I had the argument all down pat. "I pay $62 a month for health insurance. I ought to be able to get what I want." She says, "Well, Dave, that surgery is for people that are at risk." I go, "What's that mean?" She says, "Well, you don't have, your blood pressure is normal. There's nothing wrong with you. You don't have diabetes. You don't have any of these things." And I was disappointed that I didn't have diabetes. I felt that way, you know, because I just knew that if I had that bypass surgery, I could, you know, eat whatever I wanted to. And she wouldn't give it to me. She says, "Well, just follow the food plan and you'll be fine." And I left there very disappointed. And I went out and ate, you know. And then, I went back, and when I was back there, she says, "Well, you know, if you think you got a psychological, maybe you just need some support. Why don't you go to one of these weight loss programs?" I said, "Well, what is that?" She says, "Well, there's Weight Watchers and there's Overeaters Anonymous." I said, "Well, what's the difference?" She says, "Well, I don't know too much about them other than Weight Watchers cost money and Overeaters Anonymous doesn't." "And that's why I'm here. That's why I came to Overeaters Anonymous. It doesn't cost anything, so I'm not going to spend any money on myself. I know none of you are that way, but I thank God, you know, that you take care of yourself." But I came to my first meeting and I wore a Big Mac shirt, untucked from Sears. They probably don't make them anymore. And my gray pants and my gray work stuff. And I had my Fu Manchu mustache and I weighed over 300 pounds. And I looked at everybody like a guy I've been sponsoring that sits in the back of the room. That's the way I said, "Alec, you sit in the back of the room and you look like you're pissed off at everybody." He says, "Well, maybe I am. I don't know." So, and I understand that. He doesn't know. So I went to that meeting on Wednesday night and people would say, and it was wonderful because those people understood me. Finally, I met some people for the first time that ate like I did. And they welcomed me, and even though I was this big guy, they didn't matter, and they stood up and introduced the speaker, and she was this little bitty woman named Ida, and they passed these pictures around of this huge woman, and I rudely asked this lady, I said, "What are the pictures of the fat lady for?" She said, "Ask the lady, she's talking right now," and I did what I always did in those days. I followed her around. I took her to meetings. I did, and she was grateful. I gave her rights to meetings. What do you eat? The whole thing. And she said, she said, "Get a sponsor and do what the sponsor tells you to." And in those days, we had a food step and a maintenance sponsor, you know. And so the food sponsor sounded good because I wanted to lose weight and get the hell out of Overeaters Anonymous because these people that I smoked marijuana with wanted to know where I went. Where the hell are you going? Wednesday night, Dave? I go to this meeting over there. What kind of meeting? Oh, it's this meeting over here where a lot of people are there. But what do you go to the meeting for? Oh, we just sit around and talk. And you know, after they do the 20 questions, you know, get the answer, they say, oh, the hell with you. You know, they quit asking you the questions, you know. And I don't want anybody to know that I went to Overeaters Anonymous, you know. Because pride heads the list of my character defects. I don't know about you. So I'm certainly not going to admit that. And I just, so I, they had the food plan, they had the gray sheet food plan, and you, boy, there wasn't much to it, you know. And I got a sponsor, Helen, who was the woman in the meeting that looked the best and had the biggest breasts. That's how I picked my, being a man, that's how I picked my sponsor, you know. And she had three kids, one of them, which I don't remember all their names because I'm too self-centered, but I remember one of them, the name was Stephen, because I'd get on the phone and I'd call my food in, and she'd say, just a minute, Stephen, get off of there. You know, I'm sorry, Dave, that Stephen's up on the, now, okay, what were your two eggs and an orange? Stephen! I'm telling your father when he gets home, and so, you know, and we lost, and I got in a contest with her, being a competitive male, to see who lost weight the fastest. And in those days, men, I think they still do, if we go on the same food plan with a woman, we lose weight faster, you know. That's the way it was. And so, I lost all my weight. My fingers were freezing. I was on this food, you know, this starvation food plan, you know. And my toes were, it's summertime. I lived in El Cajon, for God's sake, 100 degrees out there, you know. And I couldn't go to the bathroom. And so I ended up almost in the emergency room. And this German doctor was there, and I says, well, I'm on this diet. He says, well, are you drinking water? No, what kind of diet? I showed her the diet. She says, well, you're not getting any fiber, or your body, you know. And so she's, you know, got me to take a Schlitz bath and all this stuff with Epsom. And I ended up having to take, I had to take laxatives and enemas and things like that. You know, it's very embarrassing, you know, because and she said, well, you got to get off of that food. I said, oh, hell no, you're not getting me off the food. So Lou Adler used to call it the gray sheet guilt a lot of us had, you know. If you're not on gray sheet, you're not doing it right. So that's the way it used to be. So I'd lost all my weight. And I was going to, and I found that I needed to go to more meetings, you know, because I was, you know, I my drug was gone, I had a food sponsor. I didn't have a step sponsor because we called those people the God Squad. They'd come in with their big books in the meeting and all that shit. And Helen and I would go to coffee afterwards, and the food people would sit down here, and the step people, and they'd always invite us to their meeting and get out of here. And you were nice and polite and everything. And I said, well, thank you. Well, I'll try to make it on Monday night. But it never came. You know? Because I was forced to go to the Methodist church as a little boy. My parents never went, but I had to go. And I was in Sunday school. And the big 300-pound lady that taught Sunday school didn't like little boys that threw clay and drew outside the lines. And so she told me, you know, Jesus doesn't love little boys that throw that clay. And then, you know, and so my little mind doesn't know how to rationalize that. So, well, you know, Jesus doesn't love me, so God doesn't. And you can't get to God except through Jesus, so I'm screwed. Right? So I don't want nothing to do with God, Jesus, church, or any of that stuff. And I'm just in control, you know, and out of control, and scared to death. Got a gun in my nightstand that I don't know what, I didn't know what to do with it, but I had it, and I was afraid to shoot somebody, but I was afraid not to have it with the lights on and everything, so I was a mess, you know, and then I lost all my weight, and I kept going to these meetings and women, and the men in the program in those days was Virgil, Jose, Rick White, and he was crazy, and, you know, and Ignacio and Jose, and that was it, you know, and Dan came along, and until the Navy guys came, that's all we had. I knew all the guys in the program, you know, and I think I went to the meeting I went to Wednesday night, W.D. Hall School, 2nd and Pepper, in El Cajon, and there were 12 people in the meeting, and they were all women. And a lady said, she says, you know, there's a guy named John that's going to come to the meeting. I was excited. She said, he's in the Navy, and he'll be here in a month. And I was so excited to meet John, another man in the program. And the guy comes in, he says, have you read the big book? Have you done your inventory? I didn't like it, son of a bitch, you know. And he gave me a big book, and he says, a 12 and 12, a big book, and 12 pages. I'm going to give you these books because I'm sure you'll never buy them, but maybe you'll read them someday. What an arrogant bastard. You know, I didn't like him at all. You know. And I still have the books, and they're all marked up, and I've read them. But anyway, moving along, these people with this God Squad people with these big books and everything, they kept bugging me to work the steps. And look, you've lost your weight. I know you bring your big pants to the meeting and show us how much. You got to get past that, Dave. There's more to the program than weight loss. And, oh shit, you know. I was just flying around the room, one day I just crashed, you know, and I got scared. And so this lady came and she smoked cool cigarettes. You could smoke in the meetings in those days. And she invited me to the Wednesday night Kensington meeting. And I went down there. I got a resentment. So I'll piss on you guys. I'll go to the Wednesday night meeting. I'll show you. All these people that love me and care about me. So I went down there and the meeting was huge. It was full of people in 1977 or something. And I walked in the door and this guy Jose says, "How you doing? My name's Jose. You done your inventory yet?" And, oh my God, you know. So then I met a lot of people down there. Went to coffee, and there was a guy there that came from the AA program that stopped drinking and started eating, and he was a big guy and seemed like a really nice fella, you know. And he said, "What's going on?" and all that stuff. And I said, and a lady called me from Escondido, which was 40 miles away. And I went up there and led a meeting. And I remember at those days, I thought, man, Dave, ain't you something? You drove all the way to Escondido to lead a meeting. You know, isn't that? I mean, I thought that was really, you know, really something. You know, and I didn't accept any money. And I thought, I just was really full of grandiosity. And the lady said, "Well, you know, we don't get very many people up here. Can you, if you think of anybody else, especially a man that could come up here and lead the meeting, it'd be great because we got a couple guys up here." So this guy, I got to know this guy, Pete, and I thought, well, what a smart ass, you know. Guy thinks he knows everything. He's a salesman, and he's got this, well, he's got a great pitch at the meeting and everything. I said, "We'll see if he wants to work the program." So I sent him to Escondido, you know. So we'll see how much he wants the program. And so the lady called me up the next day. She says, "Oh, thanks for sending that guy up here. You know, he was great. He took us all out to coffee and the whole thing." I said, "Man, this guy's for real, you know." And so he became my second male sponsor. And he's the guy that set me down and helped me write an inventory because I couldn't do it. And he's the guy that said, he says, "You have too much trouble." He says, "You got a Jesus problem. And you can't read this big book because you have a problem with God." So he had me read another book, which I won't tell you what it is because it's not official. I'll tell you after the meeting. And I read the book, and it was the best thing I ever did because it got me to where I could accept reading the big book. And then somebody said, "You know, why don't you come to one of these serenity retreats? They still have them, you know." And I said, "Well, what do I want to do something like that for? You know, I watch football games on the weekend. I'm busy, you know." And the guy that was on the retreat committee that followed me around, and I couldn't understand it because the guy was a teacher. He was a basketball coach. He was highly educated. And I'm a mechanic, you know. I work with my hands, wear coveralls, get all dirty. This guy, a big house in Tierra Santa. And he says, can I go to a meeting with you? I want what you have, you know." And he paid my way to the retreat, or I wouldn't have went. It cost $32 in those days. I wouldn't pay it, you know. I went up to the retreat. I took my football, my radio, all this stuff, you know. Because I just, you know, and I never could spend any time by myself. I always had something, radio on or something. And I went up to that retreat, and wow, it was unbelievable. And there was a guy up there named Bill who led the retreat. And he had a way of communicating the big book that I'd never heard before. And a lady that's still in the program, I had my first cathartic experience. I started to cry. And I couldn't stop crying. I cried all night. And this lady held me and said the third step prayer for me for the first time. And I remember the next day and the Monday after that, the obsession to eat was gone. And I couldn't understand it. People said, I'm going crazy. I'm crying. I'm out of control. I said, "No, you're growing. You know, you're doing great. You know, I couldn't understand it. You know, because I'd never cried in front of anybody. If I cried, my dad smacked the crap out of me. He said, 'You cry, I'll give you something to cry about.' Well, we've heard this from you all for years. You know, and you know, and he would say, 'Well, this hurts me more than it hurts you.' Well, that's the only way. When I wrote about my dad to get rid of, forgive him before he died and all that stuff." To get rid of the resentments, I had to write his life story and talk to my uncles and aunts and what it was like to grew up with my dad, you know. But his father died when he was 40 years old, and so he was the head of the household, and he had to raise his brother and his sister and take care of the family. He had 14 years old, he had to drive an oil truck to get oil from L.A. and drive it back up north. And he had to grow up too fast, you know. So that's the only way. My uncle told me, he said, yeah, your dad was cruel to me, you know. I listened to my dad. He said, yeah, Leland was a handful. I didn't know how to be a father. And so I began to understand my father's behavior as I grew in the program and let this man help me with my inventory. Because I thought all you had to do is write about all my terrible character defects and all this stuff. But he had me write about my relationships, which was entirely different. I kept going to these retreats. They asked me to be on the retreat committee, and I'd look at this guy Mike, and he was a treasurer, and he was registered all these people and had all these books and everything. And I thought, man, that guy's really smart. I could never do that. And he said, you know, someday you'll be the treasurer of the retreat committee. Well, he invited me to be on the retreat committee. I couldn't understand it, you know, because my whole concept of myself was I was fat, dumb, stupid, and ugly. I was 173 pounds, but I still thought I was fat, dumb, stupid, and ugly. And people would tell me, you know, Dave, you need to love yourself. I just want somebody to love me. And they'd say, Dave, you need to learn how to love yourself, you know, before that happens, you know. And I hated that. God, I hated that, you know. And I go from one, my wife divorced me because my divorce paper said, respondent suffered severe personality change as a result of involvement in the program of Overeaters Anonymous. That's almost verbatim what it said on there. And I was crying, and my sponsor was laughing, and he said, thank God. And then his girlfriend, who's now his wife, said, Pete, Dave, look at Dave. He's just, you know. And he said, my God, you know, he's you know, thank God he suffered a personality change. Well, I didn't understand. I said, well, the program has ruined my family, you know. And so I'm sleeping on Rick White's couch, and that's when I started to surrender. You know, I lost everything. And then I started this, just for me, this quest to find out about my higher power and about trusting God. And so I'm watching all these ministers on TV. I'm going to, you had a seminar, I went to it, you know, on human potential. It all helped me. It helped me learn how to say, affirm things for myself. And it helped get rid of some of the negative thinking so I could come back and work the program. I was suicidal in my third year, and a guy I sponsored gave me a dime and said, you got to call somebody. I turned my money over to him because I was going to end it, you know. And what broke at that is I was the secretary of a Saturday night meeting, and I forgot to close the windows in the church, and the lady that got us to church called me up and chewed me out, and I was standing there with a butcher knife, trying to get the courage enough to kill myself, and instead I got angry at her for chewing me out about the meeting, you know. And so those were all turning points for me. Doesn't sound very good. So I spent most of my life four or five years in recovery. I read a book and it talked about grandiose ascension. And man, I had to start writing when I read that because that's exactly what I do, you know. I'm not good enough to be a member of Overeaters Anonymous. I have to be the chairperson of the intergroup. I was almost one of your trustees until I talked myself out of it. Everybody was going to vote for me, you know. And I didn't want to be a World Service trustee, you know. So and then I'd go to church. I went to church, started going to found a church I liked, and I started going to it. And I asked the minister if I could do service. And he said, yeah, and so I went from there to being the youth coordinator. And then the people, I built this big youth group. I had the best youth group. And then some of the ministers, well, why don't you run for the regional youth consultant position? Well, I couldn't do anything else, but I didn't want to be the regional youth consultant. And I did that, and I did such a great job at it. They made the position full-time, and they wanted me to retire from the government. Well, I couldn't do that, so I resigned, and I always left all these things. Even when I was in automobile racing at 21 years old, people all wanted me to work on the racing car because I'd go around and because I didn't have any confidence myself, I'd go around and ask all these engine builders, what do I do with these spark plugs? well, how much spark meter, how much overdrive, how much nitro are you running, all this stuff. And I said, well, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, do this, Dave. This will work. And so it would work. And all the other guys, most of the other guys, they had a lot of pride, and they wouldn't ask those questions. So, you know, I learned a lot from, you know, just like the program, following the instructions. Yeah. So when I discovered that, I was accepted into the ministry, for God's sakes. I can't be a member of the church. I have to become a minister. And so I did all kinds of work. I did all kinds of, they turned me down the first year. The minister got angry, and he wrote a letter. He says, what does this guy have to do? And they told me, and I did it. You know, I chaired an international youth, what was that thing called? I can't remember, some big conference. I was the chairperson of the registration, and I did all kinds of workshops and studied and all this stuff. And they accepted me. And I said, my God, I don't want to go. So I was really confused. Well, when I read this book that's not program related, I began to understand what happened to me. And I could do some more 10-step work on it. You know, the 12 and 12 says the libraries and bookstores are a treasure trove for all seekers. You know, so a lot of people say, don't read that AA 12 and 12, stay in the big book, you'll get drunk and all this stuff. I think that's foolishness, you know. There's so much good stuff out there to help me. The group, the therapy helped me. Everything I've ever done, spending $2,000 on all those seminars helped me. Hanging around with people that, you know, that are, you know, that make a lot of money, changed my prosperity consciousness. Going to church helped me. Going to the meditation classes helped me. It's just amazing. And I'd re-audit the things, you know, because I needed more of it. So I went along in 1986, I met my wife, my second wife. Right? I was single for a long time, and living by myself with the lights out, take myself, my little kid, Dave. I got to see, they start writing this inner child of your past and all these kind of books, and I went to the ACA meeting, you know, all that stuff, you know. And everybody said, I mentioned Alan on here because that's part of my program, is somebody, all this time, these women would tell me in the program, Dave, you need to go to the other program, the non-program, the A-non, Al-Anon program. And I said, I don't need that stuff, you know. So I got married this gal who I knew I knew my wife. We went through school, went up to visit my mother in the mountains every year. She lived up in Northern California. That's where I grew up there in Tuolumne City. And my wife used to live down the street with her sister and her brother. And I noticed, I used to remember when I was a kid, I never met her mother because her mother was never home. And so what I found out later on is her family members would come by and watch out for the kids because her mother was out running around in the bars and everything. And she was divorced, you know. And so my wife happened to get alcoholism. Strange how that happened, you know. My mother, who, like I said, protected me, I'd go up to see my mother, and she'd say, well, you know, Diane James is over here, and you ought to go see Jimmy Marr. All these kids I played with when I was a little kid, we moved away in the sixth grade. So I'd go up there, and I'd visit all these people, you know. And I said, well, what about Patty? Have you seen Patty? She said, oh, no, Patty. No, you got her. Well, all of a sudden, one day, my mother said, you know, I got to be honest with you. Patty asks about you all the time. We were really real friends when we were little kids. We'd go to the movies together, and, you know, and in the Fireman's Theater for 15 cents, you get to watch the movies all day on Saturday. And innocent little kids, you know. So 30 years later, my mother says, you should call Patty up. Here's her phone number. She asks about you all the time, and I didn't tell you about her because she had four kids, and I was waiting till they all grew up. She's trying to protect me. Thanks, Mom. So, you know, just like they say, when you're not looking for somebody, they come along, you know. It was that kind of story. So she came down to the house, and we talked for hours, and I had this card that I had, you know, from dating. No offense, I was very angry at women in the program because you weren't perfect. You didn't love me. You didn't give me what you couldn't give me in the first place because I wasn't able to love myself. So you would always, say, well, Dave, I got to let you go, so you can grow. That used to make me mad, because I'm hanging on to you, and don't let me go. And I love you. Can I come over tonight? Well, yeah, I gotta go to work tomorrow. You can't come over every night, And so, oh, man, I was so needy, and that's all I could be in those days. So she came over, we talked, we hit it off, just like when we were kids, and so I went back to the house, and we called each other on the phone, having this long-distance relationship. She came down, she said, well, if you don't ask me to marry you, then I'm going to ask you. So I said, okay, I'm lonely anyway, I'm better than I was, but I'm still lonely, so... So we got married, and I said, well, wait a minute, before we get married, I got this card here. I can't deal with people that drink or use drugs. I'm going to be in this 12-step program. I got my youth group I'm involved in. Is that okay? Oh, that's fine. I don't drink. And I remember her boys, she had two boys and they were still at home, and they snickered and she kicked them, Clue number one, right? I didn't listen to it. So she came down and alcoholism happened, And I mean, I went to hell. She's, well, you love the program, you love the youth group, and then you love me. I know where I stand. Oh, man, did I buy that? Oh, man, shame. Oh, Jesus Christ. I can't. And then she's a great cook, And so, I stayed home. I quit running. And then I had all these friends in the program, which most of them were women, and they'd come by and we'd run. That was the best time. I was in great shape. I was running 4 miles a day with my friends. We were having a meeting while we ran. I taught them how to spit and the whole thing, 10 minutes. And so, so I stopped. Of course, when my wife took one look at them, that was it. They didn't come around anymore. And so I quit running. And I lost my support group there. And so I stayed home and I started eating and I didn't go to as many meetings. I got off the retreat committee, all this kind of stuff. And then finally I got so upset that one day there was a beer can sitting on the counter and I thought it was empty and I got my anger, because I stuffed my anger down. I know none of you folks do that, but I hit that beer can thinking it was empty and it was full of beer, and it almost hit my wife, and it scared the hell out of her. And I thought, wow. And that scared me, And I grabbed her and I said, you've got to knock this shit off. I used to take her to AA meetings and wait outside for them to fix her, And I told some woman in the program, Dave, you've got to get over there. You got to come with me. So I went to the meeting. And I went in the meeting and the lady named Judy, who was an old timer, she says, she listened to me at the meeting talk about my problems, and she said, I've known a lot of people like you. They've been coming to this program for years. She says, and I'm real sure I can tell you what's going to happen to you. I said, what's that? She says, you're going to have a heart attack. I said, what? She says, that's right. I've seen it many times. I'm telling you. So, well, what should I do, Judy? She says, keep coming back. But she left. I said, oh, I know what she's talking about. She's pulling a trick on me. So I went to those meetings for 6 months. I got a sponsor, and I used to go to the men's once a month dinner meeting, where we'd all the men in the other program would go to dinner. And I told my sponsor, Joe, I said, the reason I'm so prompt and current at the dinner meeting, because I'm a compulsive overeater, And he said, well, maybe you should go back to get involved in your Overeaters Anonymous program. So I, that program and being sponsored by Joe got me the courage to come back in LA and tell my wife, I gotta go into this program. So, and then I read the book after that, found out I was a weak male and I never had a male initiation. So, that's an ongoing process for me, like this program. Anyway, I came back and it was a struggle to get abstinent again. And I had a sponsor. I did the powder stuff and I lost weight. I was 50 pounds and I really kind of defiant about going back. I couldn't go back to the gray sheet and nothing fit in and I didn't have the willingness but a guy named Mark says, the one thing you need to do is keep coming back. That's the only thing you can mess up on if you don't keep coming back. And so I found these positions that I could fill that I didn't have to feel grandiose about, like loading the soda machine. There's no glory in that. So that's what kept me. I became the soda machine person. I ordered the soda, and it kept me coming back to the meetings, you know. And slowly but surely, I'm like a lot of other people. I said, well, I got to write a whole another fourth step inventory, you know. And somebody that had been around for us, no, you don't, Dave. You've been in the program a long time. You've already written a fourth step. You need to do 10 steps. And you need to get in the 11th step. And you need to get back to God. Let God come into your life. And you got all that stuff. I thought I lost everything. And people in the program straight and I said, you didn't lose everything. You just need to go back to what you know. And so it's been a process of that. And I got another sponsor and a guy I've known for years. And he's 85 now. And he's a wonderful man. And we talk quite often. I sponsor people. I sponsor a lot of people. And my day is like my day on Saturdays like this. And I get up in the morning. I go for my walk. I get have my abstinent breakfast. I write my food down. The people that I sponsor, this one guy tells me what he eats, and I tell him what I eat. Yeah, this is where I'm at. I went to the doctor. I've given blood over the years, and I found out August the 1st I was scheduled to give blood, and I used to do it because it was. You got a half a day off of work when you work for the government, so that's why I gave blood. It wasn't because of any, because I'm here because of my circumstances, not by any virtue. So there's a reason to get off work, so I gave blood. Well, I realized the other day I've given 14 gallons of blood in 30 something years. So they didn't take my blood August the 1st because my hemoglobin was too high or something like that, and my too much iron in my blood, and my blood pressure was 162/80, and they said, well, you know, we take it with your blood pressure that way because you're an old guy, 63 years old, and I'm retired, so I'd take a nap in the afternoon because I'm tired, and I thought, well, it's because I'm 63, I'm old, and when you get old, you get tired in the afternoon, and you have to take a nap, you know. That's what happens. Dave's getting old, sore all over, you know. Go down and sit in the spa, feel better, you know. And so I went to the doctor to find out, you know, and she said, well, here's what I want you to do, you know. And she said, I want you to exercise. Well, I do that, you know. And I want you to eat mostly fruits and vegetables and cut the salt. And so it's always back to fruits and vegetables, you know. Ain't that some boring shit, you know. And so... But I've been praying for God to help me, and that day, and prior to that, this willingness started to come again. You know that we all talk about, I was willing to follow directions again, and so I don't get tired. I don't get tired anymore. It's amazing, you know, You know, so I get up on Saturday morning. I go back to that. I go to the post office. I pick up the mail for the office. I get on the computer. We have an answering service that gives us all the messages that came in through the email. And they answer the phone. They tell people where the meetings are. A friend of mine, Gina, and I asked if we could do service in the office in 1999. And the people on the board says, well, yeah, I guess so. What do you, I said, well, we want to answer the phone. She says, is there any reason why the phone rings and nobody answers it? Well, the answering machine answers it. And it tells people to send a self-addressed stamped envelope in. We'll mail them back some information. You know? So we've changed all that. We took over the office. We volunteered. And we're patting ourselves on the back. We did it because we wanted to recover. You know? And so we... am I done? Or?
Three more minutes.
Okay. So... her and I decided that if we were going to recover, we had to do more stuff in the program. So her and I answer the phone. We answer all the phone messages. We took over the mailing, and we do a mailing, and we compiled another guy, a friend of mine. He donates all the envelopes. Another person donates the postage, and we started getting the names of doctors and dietitians and things like that from around the San Diego area. And we do a mailing to them every month. And you know, we make sure the message gets carried. And we make sure the 12 step happens. And we did our sixth convention. We've done the dietitians, the nurses, the National Medical Association, and we take, there's an OA display that you can take to these conventions, and there's funding you can get from World Service, and you let these people know that there's an Overeaters Anonymous, because a lot of them don't, what we found is there's a lot of them that don't know us. And I think the most important thing, I'm trying to try to find somebody up here in L.A., the California Dietitians Association loves Overeaters Anonymous. They're begging us to come to the Marriott when they have their convention. So if somebody can tell me who your public information person is, I want to hook them up with this lady. Yeah, because that's, you know, I want to make sure that there's an Overeaters Anonymous here until I, you know, you got to roll me out of the room. Because it saved my life. And my life, you know, my wife and I, my wife's 2 years sober. I didn't cause it to happen. I forgave her. I learned more about loving my wife and accepting people than I ever could anywhere else, because I have something you can't take away from me. And that's, I have a God inside of me that loves me, that's always with me, that lets me sleep with the lights off. You know, and I feel safe today, and I'm not afraid as much as I'm not perfect. I still have resentments and things like that. But I hope I haven't bored you to death. But that's my story. Sorry.